Hey everybody, it's Dave Hall with Agoge Fitness Systems and another episode of War Stories, Tales from the Front. Today I have with us Krista Scott Dixon of Stumptious.com and PrecisionNutrition.com. And I'm very excited to have her as part of our program. Go ahead and say hey, Krista.
Hey there.
So we were sort of talking offline before I started the recording a little bit about your background and your business and what it is that you do. Just to sum up real quick, can you let everybody know a little bit about your business and what it is that you do?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the shortest way of saying it, which does sound a little bit pretentious, but really I'm in the business of changing lives. And that sounds a little bit silly, but I think everyone in the fitness business knows that when you change your body, you change your life as well. And so with Precision Nutrition, we do online body transformation coaching. We also train coaches. And so in the process of changing people's bodies, we change their lives. And so it's a bit of a stretch, but not too much to actually say that I change people and I change people's lives. So that's how I would encapsulate what I do. On a more day-to-day level, I think that I just try to serve as a resource for people who, you know, just want to get in shape, stay in shape, and have fun while they do it.
Very cool, very cool. I wouldn't consider that to be presumptuous at all. I've taken as my own personal mantra of what I do is I'm actually involved in changing the world, and I'm going to do it through one individual at a time. So if I'm comfortable with that, I think you could be perfectly comfortable with changing lives.
Well, you know, I think we both realize how powerful this can be, and you know, we do see individual people one on one, and it's a microcosm, but you know, the effects can be really profound.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did you get here? What's the path that you took that got you to it?
Well, it was a funny, circuitous kind of path, and you know, I was never an athlete. I was the kid picked last for gym class, and I had glasses and braces and you know, asthma and all this kind of stuff. And so I never grew up as an athlete. But in university, the reality of the freshman 15, or in my case, freshman 50, kind of caught up with me. And so I realized that I had to find some kind of activity that I could do. But, you know, I couldn't catch a ball. I hated team sports. I didn't want to do anything like that. And so I found my way to weight training. But the difficulty was that, you know, this was in 91, there was no information available, and what was available was just stupid. It was, it treated women, you know, as idiots, and it was just stupid. But there was this information available in my university library. I mean, strength training had been around for women for decades, and there was stuff that we knew about women in weight training. So I started looking it up, and I thought, well, geez, you know, if this is useful to me, maybe someone else will find it useful too. And then when the web came around in the mid-90s and we were starting to get on it, I thought, well, I'll just put together a little website and maybe someone else will find it useful. And so I put a few pages up, and then people started asking me questions, and I thought, well, I'll make a page for that. And so my website just kind of grew and grew and grew. At the time, I was working as an academic. I finished my PhD in an unrelated field in 2002. And I thought I wanted to be an academic, and then in 2007 I decided I didn't, and I escaped academia altogether, and I came to work for Precision Nutrition. And it turned out that the skills I had developed as a researcher, as a professor, as a teacher, as, you know, all these things, were very, very handy in terms of becoming a fitness and nutrition educator. So here's where I found myself, and I certainly would never have predicted it.
Very cool. Yeah, that's... I love how life takes us in nine different directions to get us where we really need to be. Talk a little bit about your work with Precision Nutrition.
Well, we like to say that we're life-changing, research-driven nutrition coaching for everyone. That's kind of our mantra. And basically, our goal is to, again, change people's lives through offering nutrition and fitness education. And we do it in a much different way, I think, than most conventional fitness coaching businesses do. We have a really deep understanding of like what actually makes people make change, right? Because there's a ton of information out there. So it's not a lack of knowledge. There are a ton of gyms out there, so it's not a lack of equipment or facilities. You know, what's the problem? And so this is really the question, the central question that we grapple with. How do we change people's lives through nutrition and fitness? And so in practical terms, we offer online coaching. And so we have two year-long, quite intensive coaching programs. One is Scrawny to Brawny, so that's for skinny guys trying to get huge and muscular. And then we have Lean Eating, which is the biggest one, and that's for people looking to lose some fat and kind of just, you know, transform their body from a recomposition standpoint. And so I write the curriculum for Lean Eating. And again, it's a year-long program, and so our clients come to us literally every day. Like, I like to joke that I'm in people's faces every single day. So they come, they log in, they get a lesson, they get a workout, they get a task every day, and that goes over a year. So I create the program and I write the curriculum and really think about it from a behavioral change standpoint. Like, what do people need to know and do and think about and feel to change their bodies? And what does that look like on day one? What does that look like on day 13? What does that day, you know, what does that look like at day 137? So it really is thinking about, you know, what is this process that people go through when they try to change, and how can we support them all along the way? And that's what I do. And I think about as well the best way to transmit that, right? I mean, it's not just about giving information. It's about supporting people. It's about connecting with them. It's about creating a community and so forth. So I'm responsible for all of that.
Wow. That's powerful. That's really cool. I imagine that there's a substantial success rate behind that as well. That seems to be very I don't even know the adjective that I want right now, but supportive is what comes to mind, but also essential.
Yeah, absolutely.
In order for helping people.
And we definitely get a surprisingly high compliance rate. I mean, you would think, like, you know, asking people to work out a day, an hour a day would just be, I mean, every trainer listening to this right now was like, oh my God, how's that even possible? Because we know that asking people to engage in these kinds of behaviors, I mean, that's a real uphill road, right?
Yeah.
So they get coach support, but they also get the best practices of behavioral psychology. So we know what makes them tick and we know what people need. And so we actually get a very, very high compliance rate relative to the rest of the industry. And more than that, we don't get recidivism as much. So when people finish the program, sometimes they come back around for a second or even a third time just to kind of solidify the lessons, because it's a lot to take in. But we create permanent change. I mean, that's our goal, in a sense, is to put ourselves out of a job, right? To have people be self-coaching and to have made a permanent change, not be on and off this kind of crazy making roller coaster.
Nice. I like what you said about working yourself out of a job. I think all too often, excuse me, we find ourselves as trainers and coaches working ourselves into relationships of dependence.
Mm.
And so it's very refreshing to find people in the industry whose primary motive is to, you know, you're not going to be working with me in 6 months, 8 months, a year. You know, you're going to learn these lessons and be able to transmit this out into the world, into your own life.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos for that. That's very cool.
Mm-hmm. And then we do say, you know, the porch light is always on, right? Because things happen in our lives that, you know, when we're under stress, we often regress. Right, so maybe you're going along really, really well for 6 months or a year, and then something happens. You know, there's a death in the family, or who knows, whatever. And you find it's harder to kind of stick to your habits. And so, you know, you can always kind of come back to us and say, "All right, I need to have a little refresher, a little tune-up." So the porch light's always on.
Cool. I was doing a little research earlier today, mainly just lurking around inside your Facebook page, and I saw a picture that you had posted a little while back of Pudgy Stockton.
Mm.
And I always love to see her image and image of similar people like that, Chip Conrad turned me on to the whole Muscle Beach phenomenon as it started. And she's one of the prevalent characters from those days. And she also speaks to, I think, a... I don't want to say lost, because I'm working very hard, and I think others are working very hard to keep and maintain and to rekindle this spirit. But certainly an era where fitness was much more interested in ability than it was in appearance, and that it took for granted that a good appearance was just going to be a natural byproduct of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what, tell me why you posted that picture. What's your connection with Pudgy Stockton and women of strength from earlier days?
Well, I think, first of all, I share a lot of your feelings on this, for sure. I think that those of us who might call ourselves physical culturists, there's a certain love for those elements of the sport that were really about self-betterment, right, and becoming a complete human being and developing all those physical aptitudes, right? Because the Muscle Beach people weren't just strong. They were flexible. They were gymnasts. They were agile. Like, they were performative. They could do all kinds of things. And it was really about becoming the complete physical package, right? And I think that's often something that gets a little bit lost, especially now with specialized athletics, right? For me, there's also another piece, which is that I think we often tend to forget our own histories. And we tend to think that we have just invented something for the first time, and we lose the insights that came before us or that have always been around. And so I think one thing that she represents for me is that strong women have always been around, and in fact, they're way more common than we would ever have expected. I mean, the idea that women should be skinny and fragile and frail and whatever stupid thing celebrity trainers come up with, that, you know, women shouldn't lift more than 3 pounds. I mean, that's patently ridiculous. But not only that, it's historically inaccurate. It's a statement that only makes sense in the last 100, 200 years with the emergence of a leisure class that had that luxury. Most people in history didn't have the luxury of picking and choosing what loads they had to carry. And I just came back from traveling in a country that has elements of, you know, third worldness to it. And there were old ladies walking down the street carrying heavy baskets of stuff on their heads. And mm-hmm. No one gave them the memo that they shouldn't be carrying it, right? And not only that, they had fantastic posture because they had to carry these things on their heads. And honestly, I felt like a bit of a slug compared to them. So, you know, really this idea about women, what women should be and look like, I mean, this is a very recent construction. For most of human history, and in many, many places around the world, or even, you know, in North America in certain jobs, women are doing the heavy work. It's just not a thing. You just do it. You're on a farm. You're carrying loads. You're in a factory, whatever. So for me, you know, she represents that view of the world, that there are these forgotten histories, and they're so close to us in a sense. You know, they didn't happen a zillion years ago. They're happening right now. Or, you know, 50 years ago or 100 years ago.
Yeah. That brings up the fitness industry, as is practiced now, I think, is while there has always been a female element to it, the female element has largely been in terms of... And please correct me if you think I'm wrong, but has been in terms of a market. The idea being that there are, you know, there is a segment of the population who, for various reasons, feel the need or believe that their lives will be improved by maintaining a certain physical aesthetic. And so there is an aspect of the industry that is catered to helping provide that aesthetic, but maybe much like in fashion, it's coming from a very male perspective. As a female trainer and athlete, How do you feel about that, and what do you do about that?
Well, first of all, I really like your concept of the market being part of this, right? Because really what we're talking about is a very commodified kind of offering. Although, you know, I'm not sure that I would say necessarily that it's because it's a male-dominated industry. I think I would actually almost argue that it's really more about commodification in general and creating a body that you can buy. To me, that's really what it's about. And I say it doesn't strike me as so male-dominated because, I mean, not the industry itself, if you look at the numbers, absolutely, you know, it's a male-dominated industry for now. But I would say it has more to do with this kind of overall commodification of bodies and the increasing realization that bodies can be commodified, and men are feeling this too. Right? So by creating an aesthetic that's unattainable, you effectively create a group of consumers for all eternity, right? Because fitness gives us this sort of aspirational purpose, right? Like you're always working towards this thing, but you can never get there, and that's the beauty of the system. So that's kind of where it breaks down for me is really just, it's not so much about gender in terms of the way it's sold. I mean, it is sold as a gendered product, but it's more about saying, how can we leech money from as many groups of people as possible? And like I said, men are now feeling the pinch as well. I mean, you know, I think a generation ago or a couple generations ago, men could not have told you what their pecs and abs were. Like, they had no idea that they owned pecs and abs, right? But now I think pretty much every guy in North America has some concept that he has pecs and abs, and that he should maybe be thinking about that and doing something about them, right? And he probably has a pretty clear idea of how they should look. So it's really more about the emergence of an industry that is able to use gender as a way to target its consumers. But I sort of feel like it's not necessarily that it's designed to kind of oppress women for the purpose of being women. And what's interesting to me is actually that a lot of the oppression, if we want to call it that, comes what we call horizontally from other women. It's promoted, consumed, you know, reinforced by women for women. And what I hear from male trainers consistently is how incredibly frustrated they are because their aesthetic is much more like a female athlete, right? They don't care if they're working with a heavyweight lifter. You know, they're like, awesome, she's super strong. I wish she would see this in herself. And so they feel frustrated because they love the women that they're working with. They love the diversity of bodies and aesthetics. It's the women who are unbelievably harsh on themselves and who would like to be way skinnier and frailer than their male coaches would prefer. So it's an interesting kind of dichotomy I've heard. You know, a lot of trainers are just like, oh, God, how can I change her mind? It's really difficult for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely agree with that. I've jumped on my soapbox a million different times. I can't tell you how many of my female clients that I have repeated this phrase to, that you cannot get big. It is not possible. You will not bulk up. You just don't have the hormones required to do it. But there's this pervasive fear that if they pick up something heavy, they're going to instantly, you know, they're going to instantly look like Schwarzenegger from, you know, the 80s or something. You know. And I also like what you said about the changes, in particular in the masculine ideal of what men are supposed to look like. And I think you're absolutely right. I can remember recently, I have daughters, and so about a year or two, we sat down and started watching Little House on the Prairie off of Netflix or something like that. So going back to the very first season, and I think you're close to my age, so you should remember this. Michael Landon in the first season of Little House on the Prairie, Michael Landon hardly ever has a shirt on. He's always like outside working outside, and he, you know, takes his shirt off, and it's, you know, in, you know, early 1980s, late 1970s, that was a masculine ideal. It was like, yeah, Michael, take your shirt off. You look great. And by today's standards of what men think they're supposed to look like, it's like, no, Michael, put your shirt back on, bro.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, too, like the areas on women that are targeted as quote-unquote problem areas and the areas on men that are the same are precisely the areas where people struggle, right? Like men put on fat around their midsection, perfect. Let's make washboard abs the ideal. Like let's take the hardest piece to fix, quote-unquote, you know, and make it that
absolutely.
The
ideal. So what type of steps do you take in terms of your outreach to counteract this? I mean, how do you know? What are your strategies for you know? People come to you and they want this ideal that they've been sold, and you've got to convince them that maybe that's not the best way to go about doing this. How do you go about doing that?
Well, you know, one of the first things I would say is that, at the risk of sounding a cliche, we try to keep it really real. And so when I write lessons and I illustrate lessons, I try to illustrate it with real people, right? I never use fitness stock images. I never use those kind of, you know, airbrushed bodies or anything like that. I don't want to call them perfect bodies because I kind of hate that word in relation to that. But I never use those images because research shows us, first of all, those images are totally demotivating. I mean, people don't look at those bodies and think, wow, I'm totally inspired to go work out now. Like 1% of the population feels that, and awesome for them because this is going to be their world, right? But most people look at that and think, oh, screw it. I'm going to go eat a bag of chips. I'll never look like that. So I'm really, really careful about every material I put out, every piece of material I put out has to be accessible. Like people have to relate to it. So I'm going to go find a picture of someone's mom deadlifting or someone's grandmother deadlifting, even better, right? I'm going to find real bodies, tall, short, old, young, abilities, you know, different kinds of abilities or disabilities, just things that people can relate to in their real life. And also keeping it real is talking about struggles. Like someone just said to me recently, I feel like, because I gave myself a stupid gym injury, I feel like now I no longer have the right to support women in training. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. Like we all have the right to support women in training. And she said, yeah, but look, I've done this dumb thing. I'm now flawed. And I'm like, but that's the point, right? I mean, all of us, this is a journey. We're all in here making mistakes. And, you know, so I think the presumption is that you have to be a perfect person to speak about this. And I really, really try to disrupt that and to talk about the real struggles that we all experience. And one of the things I've tried to be quite public about is the fact that most people in the fitness and nutrition industry struggle with disordered eating. We all do. Like almost none of us have a lovely, healthy, pure relationship with food. It's the nature of the business. And so coming clean about that and saying, hey, man, you know what? I struggle too. And clients are like, what? Really? Like you can just see their universe shifting. So keeping it real, I think, is just and authentic and honest and really connecting it to people's daily lives is one, you know, seriously important piece. And related to that is connecting it to their daily lives. So just, you know, instead of saying, hey, deadlifting will help shape your glutes, okay, that's cool. You know, who doesn't want a perky ass? But to say something like, you know what, this is like squatting down to pick up your kid. Oh, now I see why this is useful. Okay, now I kind of get it. And so I like to turn people's attention towards functionality as much as possible because, you know, I think body preoccupation is often driven by a sense of being out of control in one's own life, right? And if you can divert people's attention to saying, look, get strong, and you're going to be so much more in control of your life. It's going to affect your ability to make decisions. It'll affect your assertiveness. It'll affect your physical sense of yourself in the world as an autonomous being. Then they're kind of like, oh, hey, that's kind of cool. You know, and I think many women have experienced, like, you take your first boxing class, right? And on the way home from the boxing class, you're, like, kicking over garbage cans. Like, you feel so fee-macho. Because it's just empowered you in a certain way. So you kind of, the more you repeat that and the more you focus on the strengths, the more you build the inner strength. And so people really relate to that because everyone wants to feel strong inside, and most people don't.
Yes, absolutely. I love introducing women to the kickboxing classes, just because, you know, again, as the father of daughters, perhaps I'm a little sensitive to this, but women have traditionally been told from being little girls, no, don't hit, you can't hit, you know, where boys, it's much more tolerated. Oh, he's just being a boy, he can't help it, he's just hitting. And so, you know, you give a woman permission to hit something and just something really cool happens.
Yeah.
So that's neat, and it's fun to be a part of, and it's fun to watch.
And I think you just nailed a piece right there, which is giving them permission. It's like there has to be this, it's like letting horses out of the gate, right? As soon as you pull the gate back and you're like, okay, it's okay to run now, then they're like, oh, okay. So once permission is given, that's very big for women. Once permission is given, then they're off to the races. But it's like they kind of have to get through that crucial step. And so, you know, in your role, it's great that you're able to do that.
Thank you. It's so weird about this business is trying to navigate the egos of your clients. So for women, it's largely trying to empower them to say, no, really, you can pick that up. You know, just go ahead and try. You're stronger than you think you are, and the more that you do this, the stronger you'll get. And it's okay to be strong. You know, guys, sometimes I'm a big guy, so I'm 6'2". I'm like 270 right now. So for them, it's navigating the whole intimidation factor of, you know, well, I'd come work out with you, Dave, but, you know, I got to get in shape first. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd kill me or anything like that. And so it's trying to navigate their own objections to their own power.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
so,
a very, very interesting question.
You know, how do you deal with that? How do you, you know, I'm assuming that you work with both men and women. So, you know, do you find that to be it's an interesting challenge. I don't know any other way to put it other than, you know, I can't approach them in the same way. I have to approach them in different ways and in ways that are very sensitive to what I perceive to being their objections.
Mm-hmm. And I think it sounds like you're doing wonderful work, and this concept of sensing in is really critical for a good coach, right? To be kind of aware of how you are in the world and then what that means for your clients. And I think that different people respond to different things, too. And there are some gender tendencies, but
mm-hmm.
each person is kind of unique in terms of their own battles. But in terms of our coaching, one of the threads that really runs through our coaching programs is giving people the tools to know themselves, right? And we have a lot of stuff around not just mindfulness, but self-knowledge in all kinds of very practical and hands-on ways, which then has its own power to transform, right? Like when someone can simply notice and name a tendency that they have, that act of naming it can transform it. So when a coach can name, I'll give you an example. So for example, in judo, I had a coach say to me, you think too much, you need to feel more. And I was like, oh, okay. Like that was a really useful piece of information. And so a coach can really act as a kind of loving yet critical mirror for the client to simply name things. And it doesn't even have to be as prescriptive as that. Like, he didn't even need to say, you need to feel more. He could have just said something like, I'm noticing that your throwing is breaking down a lot because you are thinking it through. Like, even that naming would have been transformative because I would have gone away and thought about it and thought, oh, geez, you know, well, I wonder what the opposite of thinking is. Oh, maybe it's feeling, you know. So so this concept of awareness is very, very powerful, and it's a kind of effortless coaching in a way because you're not telling people what to do. You're simply bringing things to their awareness. And more practically, for example, in, let's say you're coaching a movement, Well, you could stand there and yell at your client to, you know, put their butt a certain way or move their feet a certain way. Or you could say, hey, Susan, what's happening in your spine right now? Like, how are you holding your pelvis? What are you feeling in your core right now? And get them to become aware of their own tendencies. So whether that's physical, whether that's emotional, whether that's mental, a great part of coaching is really acting as this kind of informed observer and mirror. And so that's a great place to begin to intervene. And you can use who you are. I use who I am. I'm a small woman. So nobody's intimidated by me, right? And that acts to my advantage because women come in and they're kind of like, oh, look at you. You're small. Okay. Now I have to rethink my whole paradigm about how this whole thing works, right? And that's what I can use because that's the body I was given. You have to use a different approach because of the body you're given, right? We all, as coaches, get a little something, and we have to figure out how to leverage it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, you mentioned that, and especially, and you mentioned your own size, and I would suggest and wonder. I mean, I'm sure there is, for lack of a better word. I mean, I realize that the world doesn't fall into categories and types, but for discussion's sake, a type of client who will walk in the door, who will be intimidated by your size. You know, certainly somebody with size issues is definitely going to come in and go, oh, she can't relate to me. She doesn't know, she doesn't know my story. She doesn't know where I've been. And we, I think we're all guilty of that. And I think that it's something that can be incredibly limiting. I definitely agree with your idea about working with your story and being open with your story, and because it gives people an opportunity to realize that, what they see right now is not where you came from. It's not, you haven't always been like this. This isn't, just a gift of genetics that got you the way you are, that there's a lot of work and a struggle that took place to get there.
Yeah, and this is where it comes back to knowing yourself as well. You know, if you know yourself, then you will know what clients see in you, and you can work with that.
Yeah.
It's a self-awareness thing.
Yeah, and you can't help anybody come in touch with themselves and change their lives if you haven't done that for yourself first, right?
Oh, bingo. Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. So we talked a little bit about the past of your work and what you're doing right now. Where do you see it going? What's the future for you? What are your goals and aspirations?
I kind of struggle with that question because I never could have predicted where I ended up, and it sort of feels like every 6 months I'm always like, how the hell did I get here? So I find that predictions are often sort of challenging in this business. But, really, there's been this theme that's run through almost all the work I've done, no matter what area I've chosen to work in, which is that I seem to have this preoccupation with helping people change and finding the raw material in people that can be transformed, like helping them find their own awesomeness that already exists. So I don't fix people. I just brush away the crud to reveal the awesomeness that was already there. So whatever I'm doing, that will be kind of a central theme. Now, practically speaking, I'd like to build out our coaching programs more so that we can really transform this industry. So to roll out what we're calling our Level 2 coaching program, which is, again, coaching the coaches, basically, to train people to offer fitness and nutrition education in a way that is optimal, right, in a way that kind of takes up all these things we've just been talking about. So I'd like to change the industry. And I think my status as an outsider kind of helps me do that, right, because I used to have a math teacher that said that math should never be taught by people who are good at math. And I kind of feel like that, like fitness should maybe, or at least it should not be driven by people who are naturally good at it, because you don't understand the experiences of people who aren't good at it naturally, right?
Yeah.
So my goal is to really change the way that fitness and nutrition is thought about, is talked about, and is done in this world. And then from the client's perspective, it's the same thing, changing. Because, I mean, our coaching cohorts, so we run two cohorts a year. We start in January and July. And each cohort has several hundred people. Like, we just signed up 1,000 people for our January cohort, 2013. So, you know, we run two of those a year. You can just imagine the numbers start to add up. I think we've had about 10,000 people go through our coaching program at this point. And as part of the coaching program, we say to them, okay, we got you in shape and we changed your eating. Now you go out in the world and do something awesome and help someone else and pay it forward. So that's a lot of little nuggets going out into the world to share the goodness with others. So I'm hoping that we can change people's lives directly and indirectly. And that's really my goal for this. And I can think of all kinds of ways that this could happen. You know, I'm thinking about what I'm sort of jokingly calling a Silver Foxes program. So something for the older population, you know. No one's getting any younger, and people expect to be active and healthy much later in life. But these folks aren't getting well served. So that's one option. Just all kinds of things, you know, lower income communities, communities that haven't been traditionally as well served by the sort of standard fitness nutrition offerings. So just kind of going out into all these different worlds and helping the people within them change for the better.
I am so glad that that I got sent your way. It's been really, really
you.
Cool. I don't understand why we haven't crossed paths before, but I'm so glad that that we have. So before this gets away, I want to come back and focus on this just for a second. The level two coaching certifications that you do, I'm sure I'm going to have, you know, many trainers who are not aware of this who might be interested in following up on this. How does one go about getting connected with this?
Okay, so right now we offer a level one certification, which looks mm-hmm. a little bit more like a traditional nutrition certification. It's sort of half about, like, it's half nutrition and half like coaching how to. So it's a really great like starter piece mm-hmm. for folks who are looking to get just to be the complete package of nutrition educators. And it's also helpful for people who are working in fitness and have a bit of nutrition knowledge but really want to kind of, you know, offer that complete package for their clients, because they know that, okay, if I see a client for 2 hours a week as their personal trainer, well, I can handle the exercise part, but really what they're doing the 166 hours or whatever else in the week, you know, that's really what's making the big difference, right? So.
Yep.
So it helps people kind of become the more complete package offering for their clients. So that's our level one. Now, level two hasn't been released yet, but
yeah.
People can go to precisionnutrition.com. I think they can click on, like, products and services, and there's our coaching certification that should be listed there somewhere. I think it's, like, in the right-hand sidebar. And okay. Once they get on their mailing list, then on our mailing list, then they will get updates of anything new that we do. So there's also some free courses there that are pretty cool. So just go to the PN site, hunt around a little bit, sign up for the free course. We have a free course for fitness pros. People can also email me directly if you want to put my email address out into the show
okay.
notes or whatever. I'm, you know, any way possible to get this information into people's hands, because if they're curious, we would love to have them. And so, yeah, so get on our mailing list, and then you'll find out about you know, whatever is coming down the pipeline. And we're hoping to release it relatively soon. I mean, I'm writing it busily, and it will be a year-long program, just like our lean eating is, and you will get a daily lesson and a daily task, and it's a very similar kind of structure. So
cool.
By the end of a level two, you will definitely emerge as a complete coach. But, yeah, so it's in the works, but go to precisionnutrition.com and sign up, and you'll enjoy lots of free stuff.
Cool. Is level two going to be set up so that I have to go through level one first?
No. We actually talked about that. I think we're thinking of it more like something that's like a collection of offerings. So we're sort of joking, it's like a coffee card, like you get your coffee card punched, you know, for different kinds of coffees, and it's sort of the same concept. It's like you take what you need, right? So maybe you have the level one material totally covered and you're feeling really confident about that. You can just do level two. I mean, it's, you know, we figured that we wanted to make it as flexible and open as possible, because really we just want people to do it and to come in the place that's suitable for them, you know, to really take what they need and leave the rest. So you needn't complete it as a prerequisite.
Cool. Well, Krista, I've taken up at least 45 minutes of your time. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and your experience with us today. And thank you for taking the time to talk with me. I'm sincerely hoping that that we can stay connected and continue this conversation at a later time, because this is awesome. This is right in line with what I'm trying to teach and what I'd like to see more of out of our industry. So thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. It sounds like you're doing wonderful work, actually. So I'm just grateful that you thought of me and wanted to include me. And may I also just say, as a father of daughters, like, that's important. That's important work. It changes you, and you have a real chance to send out awesome women into the world. So it's very, very cool. So it sounds like you're doing wonderful work, and I'm glad we could connect.
Well, thank you. They were awesome long before they came to me. But yeah, I'm very proud of them. They're good girls. Well, all right, everybody. Appreciate your listening, and check out Krista Scott Dixon at Stumptious.com or the precisionnutrition.com website. And thanks again for listening. See you next week.